My name's Kay. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you a lot for allowing me to fly out to Seattle through the magic of satellites. So I'm going to just take a second to breathe because 20 minutes I was working on getting this meeting. And I think God just likes to keep me humble. He just wants me to, like when I first got in the program, it was just keep trying, just keep trying. You don't have it yet. Just keep trying, just keep going. And that's, so I've learned that in this program to just keep going forward and you will get where you need to be. So I was also just in another meeting and I was listening to the speaker and she was talking about how long she's been in the program. And I realized that I have now been in recovery longer than I was not in recovery. I had about 32, 33 years of disease and dysfunction and malfunction. And I've had 38 years of recovery. And it's better. It's definitely better this way. Some people want to know about service and what they've done. My service, I'm the chair of Greater Heartland. I am a WSO rep. I have been a region rep a couple different times. I'm on the young people's part of intergroup, WSO. And that is great to literally have Zoom meetings from all business meetings from all over the world. It's like, it is kind of amazing to do that. So what it was like, I was a big baby when I was born. I was almost 10 pounds and I would cry a lot. And finally the doctor said, feed her like a 3-month-old. So from the get-go, if you just gave me food, I would be happy. But then after that, I became a very picky eater as a kid, unless it was sweets or fats. And my mom was a healthy cook and we lived on a farm. So it's not like I could just run down to a 7-Eleven when I was little. I did steal candy when I would go to stores though. That was fun. It was sneaky from like the get-go. And I would just eat ingredients. You know, if we didn't have baked good, I would just eat ingredients that you would turn into baked goods. And I just eat those ingredients. And I would also go to other families. My mother would go to visit people and they were always so impressed with how much that little girl could eat. I would go into restaurants and I'd order all this food and they would go, boy, she can really eat. They didn't know the half of it. Somebody said, I mean, I was about 10 and I remember somebody saying, you're so little. And I'm pretty sure it was 10. And I remember thinking, but you don't understand. Once I start eating, you will never stop. That is not a normal thought for a small 10-year-old. So literally I was born this way. There was a major malfunction somewhere with the way I thought about food. I ate food, my weight, all of that stuff. It was a birthright. In high school, I've been all three of the P's. I've been a peewee, a porker, and a puker. So I tried anorexia when I was 14 or 15. It only worked for not real long. I think maybe 4 or 5 months because, you know, God bless you, anorexic. You think about food all the time, but you just don't eat. So that definitely didn't work for me. That wasn't working for me, but I tried it and it didn't work. And then all through the rest of high school, I dieted, you know, ate weird, went to college, did the college diet of drinking beer, partying, being really active. You know, I never liked my weight, but it wasn't really that awful. And then I got on my own, graduated from college, and you know, my own money, my own time frames, everything I was responsible for all of that. Didn't do it well. I read an article in one of the, it was Dear Abby or Ann Landers, one of those two. It's way back, one of those advice columns. And it talked about some family members concerned about somebody who was a bulimic. And I read this, and what I read was you can eat food and not gain weight and throw it up. Sign me up. Unfortunately, what I didn't read in the rest of the article was the devastating depressions that I would go through because of that. Because when you do that, it totally messes up your blood sugar, and it's not a good practice, let me tell you. So I did that for many, many years. I just had a low grade depression for years. And of course I hated my body. Now I just tolerate it. Now I'm old. And so I look in the mirror periodically and I'm like, yeah, you moved again, where you just keep changing locations where you're at different parts of your body. And I'm like, well, could be worse. So I just, my body, it's like, I take care of it. I eat right. I exercise. I don't shame it. I don't degrade it. I just accept it. And that's a lot better than what it used to be. Because before it was, I was never going to be good enough. And no matter what, how I looked, it was bad. In fact, I didn't really ever look at me. I would look at like this part and, you know, this part and that part, and didn't ever really look at myself in the mirror. Once I grew out of the pants that I was wearing, I just wore everything draped over. I never tucked anything in because I refused to accept how big I was getting, even though I was being an active bulimic. So then I went along, and of course it was a big secret because back in the 80s and the 70s, nobody talked about bulimia. So it was a huge shame thing. So then, hang on, I'm gonna look at notes for a second. There's kind of the joke is, yeah, I always make notes, but I never go by them, but I'm gonna try to do that. So I went for years with never really being part of the world. I looked like I was having fun. I was always with people because I couldn't stand to be alone. I was always with people, but I was never with them. They were always like in the mental distance. I couldn't connect with them. I felt like I was reaching through a cage to get to people, or I was just looking through wax paper because nothing, I just felt so distant. I was never connected with people. And I was trying. And then as far as my body with going with guys and stuff, wasn't real thrilled about them touching my body because, you know, it wasn't in great shape. So it was like, don't really want you to touch me. And then a lot of times people in OA talk about sexual inappropriateness that has been done to them, whether it was violent rapes, whether it was family, incestual type of things. And most of the women that I know in OA have had some sexual inappropriateness done to them. Doesn't matter if it's, quote, small or big, something has been done to our body that we were not wanting to happen. And that's a big thing for all of us. And I never thought that I had that much of a big deal happen to me. But in a way, I started looking back at all the attempts that were made for men to try to be inappropriate with my body. Very fortunately, I was pretty good in track, and I was pretty good, and I was always able to defend myself. And I tried never to be a willing victim. So that part was big in my program, was like, stay away from me. Don't get close to me any way, shape, or form. And then, my goodness, I have lost. Oops. All right. Oops. So now that was what it was like. So what it's like now. So, how I found OA. Years ago, I was in college and someone on a TV show read the 15 questions. And I thought, but everybody does that. To every one of the questions. The only one I actually said no to was I didn't nighty. It was the only thing. Once I got in bed, I wasn't getting back up again. But everybody does that. Everybody that should be in a way does that. That always in the back of my mind. And then I was taking a walk with a friend of mine, and she just happened to mention, remember, I didn't look like the typical OA person at this time. And she happened to mention OA, and I thought, oh, I should go to that to see what these people are. And I walked in my first meeting, and they read things. And first I thought, well, they read a lot. So I didn't go back for a long time. And then I was also in an Al-Anon course because of course I'm going to marry a fun alcoholic. And I did my four step and she said, you're a compulsive overeater. I didn't know how obsessed I was with food until it was literally a year later. And I reread that Al-Anon four step and it was all talking about food. It was the solid thing. It was for Al-Anon, but it was totally talking about food. And so then I went back and then I listened and then I'm like, and then I argued with everything they said. And then I went back and then I argued with everything they said. And then I went back and I'm like, yeah, I'm one of them. So I went to, between Al-Anon and AA, I went to a meeting just about every night. I was divorced and I was terrified to be alone with myself. So I went to a lot of meetings. I wasn't truthful because I didn't know what truth was at the time. I just wanted to be well. So I tried to like shade it so that I would sound well. That doesn't work. And some of the meetings that were technically bad meetings where we talk about food too much helped me because I learned that we all hide food. Like we try to hide food from ourselves. Yeah, that's genius because not like we'd ever forget where food was. About, you know, there's no calories if you take 1,000 little bites. There's no calories if you eat it while you're eating over the sink. You know, things like that. All those things we think, well, you know, when people talk about that, I thought I truly do belong. I'm not just crazy. I'm just a compulsive overeater. I always tried every easier, softer way I thought that there was. Then I found out that the easiest, softest way is taking those tools and building your steps. And that's just the way I see it. I see just the little toolbox and I carry them. And those are my literatures and those are my meetings. That's all the tools I have and they just build my steps for me. And it didn't matter if I did the 1, 2, 3 walls for a long time. 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3. And now people say, what step are you using? And I'm like, I'm working all of them all the time. I don't really pick a step to work on. I just like, where am I in my life? And it's like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's a first step day. And you know, I've been abstinent since February 15th of 1984. Somebody do the math. I think that's 38 years. But I'd been in 2.5 years and I'd get like 3 months and I, you know, this is hard. And it's 4 months. And this is hard. But I kept coming back. And there, because there was things in my life I just couldn't get over. I couldn't figure them out. I'd get to this wall inside my recovery and it was like I was just stuck. And I'd think, why can't I get over this? Why can't I get over this? And then I heard a speaker and this person. And this person and I have now been friends for like close to 40 years. And he talked about the getting to a stumbling block or a hurdle and we'd bounce off it. And then we'd start making a trench in front of our wall. And we'd start making it so it was deeper and deeper and hard to get over and hard to go over. And he goes, but let us help you. And he wasn't talking to me, but he just said, let us help you. And he said, picture the wall with people reaching over and holding your hand and pulling you up and us below you and heisting you up over the wall. You're safe with us. It's okay. And that was huge. And when I would get to those hurdles or those walls again, I would stop instead of digging myself in and running away. And I would reach out to people and I started being honest. And that was a big part for me, was being honest and allowing myself to not only need help, but allowing people to help me. Because when I allowed people to help me, that allowed them to be helpful, which is also part of this. I was giving to them as I needed them. I don't know if that makes sense, but it does. Asking for help is honoring someone that you trust them to ask. It's just like when I call my sponsor, I honor her being truthful with her. If I don't call her, I'm not giving her any honor. I'm off my notes. Because I would just get numb with food all the time. And I watched this show lately, and it was on one of the cable channels. And it was about taking care of our bodies and the stumbling blocks people have as they take care of the bodies. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, it's fascinating. Because my world, my education is in the body and stuff and how to take care of it. That was funny when I was compulsively overeating and abusing myself all the time. But I thought, this is amazing. It's like, it would be nice if everybody could know that. And then I got sad because I thought, people not in recovery can't do that. They can't do the helpful mental, spiritual, and physical things they need to do because we're so wounded. You know, addiction takes half of our souls out. And every time you go to a meeting, you take a little chunk of your soul back. Every time you talk to somebody, you take a little chunk of your soul back. Because before, I just wasn't enough. I just wasn't enough. I wasn't enough for anything. And so, but now, just the speaker just before that said, you're enough. She wasn't talking to me. She goes, you're enough. And I thought, that's right. I am God's unconditionally, I'm an unconditionally loved child of God. And the people that I sponsor, I make them say that, and I can feel the day when they feel that. An unconditionally loved child of God. Some people have issues with the, with, you know, the higher power of my understanding. Some people call HP hope and peace. Some people, God is good orderly direction. So whatever you need to do, an unconditionally loved child of the universe. Hang on, I'm reading. All right, now I'm just going to talk some random notes. I have no clue how long I've got to take. But what this program has given me a life. It has given me nurturing. It has given me a husband that sometimes I want to hug him with a knife. I learned that from another program, Porphin. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what mood he's in. I don't ever have to be in a bad mood. He's a good guy. He's a really good guy. If he was here, he would. I would say this to his face because he's a good guy. But he is not me, and so he's different. And it's like, I learn from him. I learn from people. I learn from the people that I sponsor. I had someone that I sponsor, and she's just yelling at me and on the phone, and I look at the phone, and I'm like, you're not supposed to, I didn't say this, but I'm just looking at the phone going, you're not supposed to yell at your sponsor, you know? I learned from her that when you yell like that, you're fearful, that her anger was just covering up her fear. So now when I get angry, I'm like, what am I afraid of? And sometimes, you know, we can't live with anger. It doesn't say we don't get angry. It says we cannot live with anger. So there's nothing wrong with getting angry. There's times when my anger has served me well because I will stand up for causes. I will stand up for other people. I will stand up for animals. And so there's nothing wrong with getting anger. When it gets in my way, where is it in the big book? It says, when it gets in my way of the third step is prayer. So I may better service to him. But your character defects gets in the way of doing his will, then it's a defect. Otherwise, it's just part of your character. Humor can be a defect of character, just like my family used humor to cover up all emotions. That's a defect of character. But being able to laugh at yourself is a good thing. Fear, nothing wrong with fear. Fear can either be false evidence is appear real. So it's like, what am I afraid of? Oh, something that might happen, but probably won't. False evidence is appear real. Also, it can also mean face everything and recover. So fear isn't bad because sometimes you need to be a little fearful. It's like, we got some holidays coming up. I'm a little fearful of what happens if I don't get a game plan. So then I get a game plan because I faced everything and I recovered. And there's another one, faith. It's like, I have a lot of faith. And it's like, I forsake all, I trust him or her or higher power, whatever you want to do. So as you go in this program, as you go along, you get these little snippets. So when you're in a tough place and you're confused and you don't know what to do, I used to grab that big book, open it up and just like go like that. And I'd point to something and I would read. And I would read it repeatedly until I could tell you what was in that paragraph. Because you know how your eyes can just move back and forth and you don't really read it? And because I am attention deficit, it's obvious to know me. But when my brain spips around, it used to go to the dark side. It was the dark side. But now it's like I can remember what people say in meetings and I can pull myself out. If I get really mad at everything, I can write a list of gratitudes. I can journal. Some people are big journalists. I'm not, I can't page journal a page and a half. I get like a paragraph and I'm good. Sometimes it's just a word I need to journal. So I use the tools to build my steps. Am I powerless? Yes. Is my life unmanageable? Yeah, when I'm doing my addiction, it sure isn't. Is there a power greater than myself that restore me to sanity? Sometimes I have to look at my insanity to realize what I need to be restored from. Will the power greater than myself turn my life over to the care of, it's really sad. I when I misquote a prayer, isn't it? Or a step, isn't it? Turn my will and my life over the care of God. And as I understand him differently as I go along too, he's much more loving and giving as I go. 4 and 5, not the easiest thing. The first time I did it, I said, oh, it's like 50 pages. And she goes, no, you don't have to write every rotten, horrid things you've ever done, the exact nature of your wrongs. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so it didn't take too many things for her to just come out with you're a liar and a thief. So that was demoralizing. But when I got done, I wanted the archangels. Where were the archangels to shine and bugle for me? Because I accomplished that, because I was not a really good accomplisher. It was like when somebody suggested, why don't you leave one bite on your plate? And I'm like, why? You know, because I throw it away. I'm just going to dig through the trash. And it's like, but I thought, okay, I'm gonna try this. So I left a bite on my plate. I wanted the local paper there. I wanted a news story about it. I left one bite of food on my plate. But I learned that from a meeting, and I learned it's okay. I learned it's okay. The one there's not enough to save, throw it away. Which garbage can am I going to use today? My dad and I would sit at the table at the end of the day, and my mom, I remember saying this, there's not enough to save. Which one of you two are going to eat it? You know, and a garbage can is a garbage can. You're not a garbage can. You don't have to be a garbage can anymore. In my refrigerator now, there has food. It's called leftovers. Major accomplishment of leftovers. It's also an accomplishment for food has rotted in my refrigerator. Not a good thing. But I was like, I remember the first time I saw food in there and I'm like, I let food rot. That's amazing. So how much time have I got left? Because I don't want to start something.
You've got 7 more minutes.
Okay, we're going to probably about 2. Because most of the speakers around here are like 20 minutes. So I'm like used to kind of a 20-minute thing. But or I could just end and we can do longer questions. You want to do that?
You can do that.
Oh, but my grand finale statement is, just keep coming back. It's the only thing I did right. The only thing I did right was keep coming back. I was too afraid to quit, so I kept coming back. I kept listening. I got more and more in my repertoire of stuff that I could refer to when I wanted to eat. I started learning from my mistakes instead of beating myself for my mistakes. And the last time, February 14th, because I didn't have a date, of course I went home. And the genius part of this, so I ate massive amounts of ice cold food in my bathroom in the heater, and then I was a bulimic. You're not real pretty when you're after you purge that kind of food. And instead of saying to myself, you're so stupid, you're so adequate, when I knew about nutrition, I knew about it, you're so stupid, blah, blah. Somehow I looked in the mirror, and you're not very pretty, like I said, and it was a power greater than myself that said to me, I love you too much to do this than you anymore. Were there times after that I wanted to binge? Absolutely. But for once, I remembered that I had worth and I was worth fighting for. Up, I lied, there's one more thing. I also binged on water one night. I was abstinent, I'd been absent for a while. And I just wanted to eat. I would go to the kitchen, I'd drink water. I'd walk out of the kitchen, I'd come back to the kitchen, I'd look around, I'd drink water. Now, you think, what's the big deal with drinking that much water? I'll tell you, it's very painful. You only can eliminate it so fast. I used to feel like that all the time when I'd binge, but I didn't remember those pains because I was wired up on sugar. But since it was just water, I remembered the physical pain. And I'm like, I used to do this to myself daily. You want some insanity? That's pretty much with the bow. So with that, I 100% stop. Thank you for asking me. Thank my power greater than myself to finally getting all this video stuff to work, because I was panicked and done. Okay, thanks. Bye.